Hi, my name is Michael Creamer, and welcome to the We Make It Work Corporate Real Estate Podcast. This is the second podcast in the British Council of Office series and features the leaders of two of the four work streams, that being business and ESG, all of which is certainly relevant in the UK, but in a wider global environment. Today, I'll be talking to Chris Kane, who is an author, advisor, NED, and co-founder of Everything Omni, and Hannah Davis, a director at Faithful & Gould. Welcome to you both.
Hello, Michael.
Hi.
Chris, first, congratulations on the new book. Quick plug for that. When's it coming out?
Coming out on the 25th of May.
Right. Everyone buy a copy.
It's a manifesto for change.
Good. Well, which is what we're going to be talking about today. So we know, if we start with you, that the customer demand, if we can call it that, has been upended. What I'm interested in is maybe digging in straight away into how are you developing the thinking within your work stream about what the purpose of the office is going forward and into the future?
I think for the first time ever, people are thinking about the purpose of the office like never before. And it's great to have Hannah here today to talk about a very important constituent of this, which is ESG, because we haven't really thought about it before. For the first time ever, the nature of demand has changed beyond all recognition. The pandemic has not only changed the game, but it's changed the entire stadium. Now, we can spend a lot of time debating hybrid and work. We actually have to move way beyond that. We have to recognize that consumer choice is here to stay, that business will require greater agility and resilience like never before. And frankly, our industry is stuck in analog, whereas the wider world is moving or has moved rapidly into a digital world. ESG is now center stage. So whatever the debate, we now have to make that part and parcel of all our thinking as we reconsider the purpose of the office. Offices were very successful for organizations and for our industry for many decades. But they're all based on industrial age paper processing industry. And it's not a binary debate about work from office or work from home. It's a bit like what the retail industry had to do 10 years ago and embrace multi-dimensional, omni-channel workplace provision, whether that be in the home, in a traditional office, in anywhere else. And it's all going to be underpinned by purpose. People will not work for organizations unless they can see it has a purpose which ties into the entire ESG agenda. So we've got to get serious as real estate people about ESG. That's the bottom line.
Okay, so great segue to you, Hannah. Let's put ESG at the top of the agenda, which is where I think we all think it should be. What does that actually look like or mean? What have people got to focus on first?
Yeah, so I think people are, I think probably the environmental element people are most familiar with. And I think you're seeing a lot of organizations now having that as part of their core organizational objectives, right? You're seeing some of the social coming through as well. And part of that is how you use your real estate, how do you use your assets towards social and environmental objectives. I think what we're missing a lot of the time, and that's come out of some of the work we've been doing as part of the pillar research, is that what people, I think, are having challenges with are the governance. So that G part of how you actually mobilise your assets to achieve those organisational objectives, which are ever more so, including social and environmental objectives, is really, really important. And I think that's where we need to focus on, because that then enables the achievement of those. And there's, of course, all the core objectives, you know, operational efficiency, profit, you know, all of these things are about doing more with less, you know, that sustainability. We need to enable that decision making in our built environment.
And just on the governance piece, just to be clear,
yeah,
can we maybe dig a little bit? And there's two parts to that. I think one is, what is the government regulation, which we know varies by country and even in the US by city and by state. And then there's what companies do over and above that, right?
Yeah, so you've got legislative change, which is certainly part of governance, right? And that varies. That's happening, but you know, almost by necessity, that is quite a slow ship to turn. So I think what we're seeing now is customer consumer demand, and therefore organisations, the pace of change that they're looking to achieve in those areas outranks the legislative change, and I think that's what this is about. This is about helping organizations make good decisions about their assets, informed decisions about their assets, so that they can weigh all of these things up in a knowledgeable way, so that they are considering the social elements, the environmental elements, alongside the commercial elements.
But we may be too late, Hannah, because, you know, a lot of people have talked about the Social Value Act in the UK coming in to play 2012. What's happened over the last 10 years, as you and your colleagues have said in the recent building feature about this, the problem is systemic. We have a system which is fundamentally ill-suited for today's world. It's based upon medieval leasing practices, out-of-date construction practices, and a not-fit-for-purpose system to meet the demands of the consumer today. And the consumer, the big difference is, as has been witnessed by many large organizations, you know, you look at the walkout on Google, a couple of just in response to their demands to return to the office. The secret sauce for most organizations now, as we discovered in our workshops, was that to be seen as an employer of choice is now a critical success factor. And implicit in all of that is the working practices and the workplaces from where that work is done. And it's no longer about thousands of people trooping into Bank Station Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. Those days are over and we're not going back, because organizations can't go back because they're not getting the talent. So therefore, the real estate industry has to fully understand not just assets, construction, etc., but the people who work for the tenants, because that causal link is now there and we've got to understand it. And that brings in the whole societal governance, ethics, all of those aspects. It's a very interesting world we're facing, and it's here now. It's not coming in 3 years'
right.
time.
So let's talk about two things in that. And I'll come back to you, Hannah. I'm really curious to dig into place, and I'm really interested in the S part of the ESG. So in terms of buildings, do you think this shift that you're talking about, Chris, which everyone can see, if you just think about the built environment, people, when they do come into an office, so they've made that choice, how important is what's happening to the built environment going to impact on that? Not only obviously the fit out inside the building, but I'm also talking about the purpose of place and in the built environment specifically.
I think that's a great question, Michael. I think, you and I have been around the block a few times. And what's happened, I think, in the last few years is that the entire relationship between people and place has been upended and is being redefined right in front of our eyes. The notion of people consolidating, say, into the City of London, the ethos of the city was a square mile originally. You take Manhattan, you know, the talks there are that 20% of the entire office stock will never be used again, and the other 80% is not fit for purpose from a carbon footprint, a sustainability perspective. And employers are going to say, even more so than they ever did before, to their landlords, we're not going to lease space unless you can demonstrate to us that it delivers a degree of sustainability. And that's why, you know, the key thing for me is that carbon reduction is now non-negotiable.
Hannah, the S in ESG and how that relates to what Chris has said?
So I think what you've done there is really well articulate some of the challenges that we have. And what we've seen, I think, is a change in, as you say, demand based on social and environmental factors. Now, when you kind of break it down, you know, it's certainly not too late. It is here now. But what we're talking about here is managing change. And we manage change in the built environment, you know, a lot. We need to get better at managing change. We need to have better systems in place to get the right information in the right place at the right time so that we can make informed decisions. But we can do that. We can mobilize towards that change. And I think if we put better systems in place, we'll be able to mobilize not only behind net zero carbon.
Yeah, but Hannah, if I may, we still waste thousands of tons by doing fit outs. That's a systemic issue. Buildings overall account for 40% of all greenhouse gases. And people who are coming to work for the large organizations who are tenants of this industry are saying, we don't want to be associated with that. Who would have thought that BP, for example, are talking about getting out of the fossil fuel business within 10 years. You know, there's some really big changes. And as an industry, you know, we are not well regarded, whether it's construction or real estate, by the public. And rightfully so. Like modular construction, people are still talking about that as a minority sport.
Yeah, but you can't just talk about all the problems without thinking about how you actually govern the change towards that. And that's what I'm saying.
Fair point.
You know, we can talk about the problems, and yes, there are big problems out there, but unless you're actually, I think people find that quite intimidating and inaccessible and opaque in terms of actually putting standard practices, systems and decisions in place that can actually help solve that and move towards that. And that's not something we're just seeing now. We're always going to have change. We're always going to have a change in requirement. So I think that's what we're saying now. Look at your systems. These are very practical ways that you can actually start making better decisions and better investments. But you've got to do that in a way that's driven by data and information. That's how you change the status quo. You know, yes, the degree of the problem, the size of the fire, if you like, sure, it's a factor, but it's not the only thing. We need to look at how we actually change that. And that is very doable.
So is that, and I completely agree with this idea. I mean, I think we're a very data poor industry to bounce off what Chris has been saying. I mean, we know all about rents and yields and we can get lots of economic data, but as what we do, you know, what the impact of buildings is has always been secondary, let's say. We're now saying it's at the top of the agenda, Hannah. But is that ability to collect the data that the industry needs to make this change you're talking about, how does that happen? Is that back to your governance question?
So this is where everything's coming together, I think, really, really well, is you've got recognition of these big problems, big challenges that we face. What you've also got is things like the ISO 55001 coming out, the asset management ISO, that kind of has solved and outlines these standard systems, processes, tools that you can use to affect change in the built environment. And that's what we need to do. We need to affect change. So these things are already coming together, I think, very, very well. You've got these standardized international tools and systems and processes. It's about working with organizations to help them embed those so that they're making better decisions about social, about governance, but also around operational efficiency. You know, that, I think you were mentioning earlier, Chris, agility is one of the main challenges. Having the right information, having the right systems in place, having people within your organization's supply chain all geared towards clear objectives will allow organizations and the built environment to be much more agile for the current and future challenges.
I agree with all you say. However, because of the way we lease and own buildings, and because there is a huge chasm between asset management, property management, facilities management, we have three different tribes measuring three different things, and nobody is talking to one another. There's great data available on HVAC, lighting systems, environmental factors, whatever. But, you know, we're now trying to support tenants whose workforces don't work in the office Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. And, you know, one of the questions that came out of some of our roundtables was, how do you run a facility for 3 days a week? And that's where the other big, I think, conclusion was, and that we had a very diverse number of people in our two sessions, was that there is a huge need for a much better and a proper dialogue between the consumers and the providers of the built environment.
And I guess the question that begs actually is not, one is how, and we can talk about that, but also should. I mean, if you're only going to need the building 3 days, let's say out of 5 to be generous, rather than 7, should you be running the building at all? So is that something you talked about?
Yes, indeed. And I think that's why Despina, as the incoming president of BCO, is very far-sighted in saying the BCO as an organization, to maintain any form of relevance, needs to be thinking not in a 3-year program, but I think in a 6 to 12 month program, to understand the huge impact that's happening today on what we do and how we do it. And it's not just about making adjustments. It's moving very fast to meet the very radically different sort of shifts in how people are consuming real estate.
So I wonder if looking at that then, so the there's this key challenge if you take the using offices 3 days a week. So clearly there's a social element there, right? So and a sustainability element there, an environmental element there, and how you use that. You know, it would be very possible to use, or should be possible, for assets to be used by other parts of the community other businesses possibly. You know, we need to relook at the way we are occupying this.
I know, but your lease says you can't sublet, and then you have to get landlord's permission. That'll take weeks, if not months.
Yeah, look, these things aren't immediate, and you do need to think of, in FM as well, you need to think in terms of generations of contracts, right? That doesn't mean it's not worthwhile to do. And what we're starting to see is these types of arrangements come into place. I think when it comes to looking at offices, what we can do, again, is get those briefs within client organisations that are clear around the social environmental aspects that they want to achieve within those projects. With a clear policy and a clear direction, I think you can mobilise internally and your supply chain towards building, refurbishing, you know, developing assets which are used in a more dynamic way and work towards your environmental and your social aspirations. But you've got to have clear processes in line, because you've really got to rally people. This is change, right? So people have got to be clear and rallied towards solving these complex problems that haven't been solved before. But I think with that direction, with that consistency with the supply chain, that is achievable, not tomorrow.
So I think, yeah, and just to pick up on that, Chris, I mean, what you're both saying is that there is a need for forgetting about whatever lease is in place and what it says. We've got an imperative, which we've been talking about. So landlords need to think very carefully about how they can repurpose their building to meet this new demand, let's call it. Occupiers need to be prepared to work with landlords to say, okay, my lease may say this, but let's start changing things, irrespective of what the lease may or may not say, because that's relatively easy to change if you've got two willing parties, right? And we've got something that's bigger than both the landlord and the tenant, and that's an environmental issue that, as you said right at the beginning, Chris, should be at the top of everyone's agenda.
I don't think it can be it can't be anything else but top of the agenda in that respect. And I think the way I would describe it is, if for all of us, is not only has the game changed, but the entire stadium has changed. And we need to develop a far better range of perspectives on all of these massive shifts. You know, you take for the last 3 to 6 months alone, the unveiling of ChatGPT and the major tech companies all racing to develop these even further. And I'm not sure our industry has realized the implications of such. So let me just dwell for 30 seconds on this. So you're a typical CFO of a large organization which does a lot of processing, say an insurance company. An insurance company, for example, processes claims and sells insurance policies. Most of that work is done by thousands of people in offices right around the world. And we can pick any big brand. I'm sure you represent many of them at Cushman & Wakefield. And Faithful Gould advise a lot of them. What if they say, well, much of the work done by many of these people can be automated. I'm not going to need all that much space, am I? Now, there's huge arguments over, you know, new jobs emerging. And that will happen. But one thing is for sure, there is a huge tsunami of change taking place and how enterprises are going to organize themselves. The big behemoth multinationals may not be the same organization in the next couple of years than they were pre-pandemic. People would say, and they'll look at, you know, barriers to entry in most sectors now have been significantly reduced by technology. And it's accelerated by all of the other advances. We're not doing enough to understand the implications of all of this. And that's why I welcome the opportunity to work with the BCO, I mean, a Freudian slip there, to help people to be aware of this, you know, to be bold enough to consider things which are not conventional, to be brave enough to go beyond the siloed boundaries. Take real estate construction and facility management. Three different tribes, three different languages, but we're all delivering the same product. And we've got to get into the customer service business now. We've got to understand customer and workplace experience. We've got to stop paying lip service to CSR and the environmental, social side of things. And we've got to consider that the really key thing for all of us, and this is going to be an anathema to the BCO and its British sort of specification of offices, and indeed to the SIBC and all the other standards you talked about, one size fits all is over. The work done in offices, that era is now closed, and we're into a whole new ballgame.
Yeah, it's interesting. You say that, you know, and I agree, you know, we need a new view. We're kind of entrenched in this way of doing things. And I would say, you know, what we don't want to do is move into a position where we're in a new entrenched view. What we want is to be more agile and more able to actually learn from our own decisions to get better about it. And I think that's where the BCO have a great role to play in terms of helping the whole industry learn those lessons and embed that change. Because we're not going to solve this first time. No one's going to solve this first time. But if we can effectively learn together, we're going to get there a lot faster as an industry. And as you say, you know, platting together all of these different parts of our industry, you know, whether you're talking about asset management, facilities management, construction, again, all of the, there are a lot of enablers there. There's a lot of good news. I think the asset management ISO I mentioned, but you've got the BIM standards, you've got all of this is coming together to try.
We're all talking to different parts of our entire community, and we're not actually cross-fertilizing, or we're not having enough meaningful discussions within an industry, and more importantly, we're not properly engaging with our customer. Most people in the real estate industry think the customer base is the property investor. But if the consumer of the space who pays the rent goes elsewhere, and I think the biggest risk to our industry is external disruption. Real estate construction, facility management is all highly attractive to external parties using technology and using different thinking. You know, we've got to get into the 21st century, Michael.
I would agree with you. I think what Hannah's saying and the direction of travel is there. It's a question of how quickly you do it. And I think one of the big problems is, you know, how quickly can you do it? Because not everything we have now is broken. And yes, some buildings will become obsolete and get converted into a different use, or that'll all play out based on economics and other things. But fundamentally, at the core, there's this need to think about office space, as you said, as one element of where people work. And therefore, what should it look like?
Yeah, and I would correct you there. I don't think using the word broken is the right thing. I think we as an industry never expected that the game and the stadium would change all at the same time globally. You know, we've all recognized that markets change or whatever. And a lot of our colleagues are expecting that this is cyclical and things are going to swing back. You know, you look at the recent press commentary about our friends in the US and they're talking, oh, it'll all come back. But corporate America is changing, as you guys at Cushman know. And it started to change in the last 6 to 12 months because they've had to accept. Look at San Francisco. It's half empty.
Yeah. Well, my only comment on that would be you're calling it out at a specific time point, and we don't know where it's...
No, and we don't know.
Because you could quote like JP Morgan saying that everyone above, I think it's MD, has got to come back into the office 5 days a week. Now, what impact will that have on not only on that bank, but on other banks? So I think that's the point, that we've got to manage change better, and we've got to look at the industry in a different way. So maybe just to wrap up, you're both running these pillars of research within the BCO. You both, I think, very well articulated the fact that this is an issue now in the next 6 to 12 months, and the industry needs to pivot. And maybe I'll start with you, Chris, and then finish with you, Hannah. What else in those pillars are you talking about that perhaps we haven't mentioned that you want to kind of raise on this podcast?
I think it's more about emphasizing the need for proper dialogue, both within the various tribes of the construction, real estate, facilities, property management sector, and indeed to have a proper dialogue with our consumers and our investors and our policymakers. We're moving rapidly from a model which was fixed in a location to an omni, multi-channel, multi-dimension. Because what we haven't spoken about here, which we started to think about, was the nature of work itself is premised upon industrial age, Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. That too is changing. And we haven't mentioned metaverse, and we haven't mentioned that dynamic and the fact that that's yet another new technology, new tool, which is coming, which has an impact. So that all underpins my thesis that the fundamental relationship between people and place, which was analog for most of us, has now completely shifted into digital. But it has this added aspect of, some might call it a complication, you know, this ESG thing. Well, we've got to get serious about this, and we've got to get serious about carbon. And that's where you have to have proper governance, proper, accessibility to data right across, and also to understand the whole ethical and governance side of things.
A lot to think about, Hannah.
Yeah, no, I mean, there is a lot to think about, isn't there? And I think what's very interesting is there was a huge commonality in what we've been hearing back and the key outcomes. And I think a lot of it was around having clarity in terms of strategy and direction of the BCO, but also driving that clarity in the direction and objectives of the real estate functions within organisations, so that they know where they're going, they know where they want to go in terms of their social and environmental objectives. And I think there was a really loud need, a well-articulated need, for the tools to do that. So for examples, for standards, for best practice, because I think people are a little bit lost. They recognise the challenge, but how you actually take those steps to enable that change and embed that change was, you know, is a challenge for everyone. And I think that's where we can come together as an industry with BCO to try and solve some of this challenge.
Great. We could debate this all day long, of course. Let me call it to a halt there. Thank you both very much for your thoughts and comments. I'm sure there's more to come, so it'll be very interesting to see where the BCO gets to around this post, I guess, Dublin. And we can talk about it some more then. And this need to do it really quickly, I couldn't agree with more. So it's something that's with us now, not tomorrow. And tomorrow, I guess I should say.
Yeah.
And the next
and
day.
Beyond.
And
yeah.
Beyond. I mean, it's something. So thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.